Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, hello, hello. It is the hard cut, so you know that is Wednesday night, and you know what that means. It is another episode of the Mark Order Podcast. If you're confused why Kate's not talking, since it was promoted that she would be here, she very last minute decided to big time us and go to that other fighting place.
Well, much like Dynamite, card is subject to change.
So we appreciate you for coming checking us out. If you are looking for Kate, we understand she is over at Fightful. We hope you could flip between the two of us and show us all some love. I can't actually get mad, you know. She's got to do what she's got to do. But don't tell her that. I want her to think I'm furious. But I am joined. I don't say as always, because apparently not as always. But I am joined by my co-host, Joe. How we doing, Joe?
I joined you for a hot minute last week.
You did. I actually forgot. You did join us for that. We will have commercials this week, so you joined us for the non-existent pre-commercial break.
Yeah. So I mean, I wanted to celebrate my birthday with you, Ryan. So that's why I joined last week.
Yeah, you're 85.
Oh, closer to 58, but I'll take it.
I mean, I'm closer to 58 than I am 8.
That's factual, yeah.
Sad.
But otherwise, everything good. It's just cold here.
You know, it's cold. What's your temperature right now for you?
Today was warm. So today was like 30.
Oh, fuck you. It was, if I can get my thing to open, my right now it's 13 degrees. The high was 20 today. And it'll get down to like the single digits in a little bit.
Well, if it makes you feel better, yesterday I woke up and it was negative 12.
We haven't hit the negatives yet.
That's not wind chill. That was just no. So I think it felt like negative 20 something.
Yeah, we don't usually hit negatives here. Thank God. But we do get cold. I mean, I will say, like, we get all the seasons on the East Coast in Jersey. We get the cold winters and we get the hot summers. Yeah, so Big G's got 9 degrees in PA. So yeah, Big G's around, I think, around me, kind of. So dealing with the same thing. And I'm sure if you're listening, apparently the whole country is dealing with cold, even in Scott, even in Taylor. So you're probably like, we don't want to, I'm dealing with the cold myself. Well, too bad. It snowed in New Orleans where they're going to have the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I saw it. It's like around that kind of the south there, between like northern Florida, Georgia, New Orleans.
Scott was negative 7 for Scott this morning. Jesus.
There you go.
I don't think the snow is going to be there when the Super Bowl happens, though. I mean, I know it's a dome, so it doesn't matter, but.
Yeah. But it's a wacky climate that we live in.
Yeah, we did get. Have you gotten snow?
Less, maybe an inch or less so far this year, this season.
Hi, Kylie. We got two snowstorms. One was supposed to be a lot, and it wasn't. It was probably like an inch. This last one's probably like 3. But it was just all ice under it, so like shoveling sucked. How many times I almost broke my neck trying to shovel because there's just a sheet of ice under the snow.
Can't have that. That's not good.
Eric, there's a joke there, but I'm not sure. An inch or less dating chat, Joe. Kylie, tell your partner to get in the car and get to you. That 4 hours away, that's drivable distance.
Yeah, more than, yeah.
All right, since we're in the beginning of the show and we haven't seen each other for a couple weeks, Big G brings up a question. Who do you have winning the championship games? I think we know who I have winning the NFC.
The Commanders.
Probably.
Because all in on... You want to see Zach Ertz do well, and you're really
pulling. Nothing against Zach Ertz. I believe
Joe Hendry.
My luck. I do believe in Joe Hendry. My luck is the type the Commanders will win, but clearly I would vote Eagles because I can't support other teams. And then in the West, KC. I mean, as much as I'd prefer it to be Buffalo, it's going to be KC.
I'm going to go Eagles because until someone stops Saquon. So I'm going to go Eagles from the NFC, and then I'm going to go with the Bills. I think the Bills finally toppled the Chiefs and get over the hill.
Listen, I appreciate that majority of the fans out there want a Commanders Bills Super Bowl. The two teams that never win it.
Oh, I don't care about the Commanders.
But a lot of people cheer for the underdogs, and that's the Commanders. I mean, because the Eagles won in 2017, so like relatively, you know, under a decade, and they've been back since then. So I get people being like, I'd rather the team that never wins, and then the Bills who are just. I will say this, though. The Bills beating the Chiefs is a bigger story than the Commanders beating the Eagles, because the Eagles haven't been the Commanders' kryptonite. They haven't been the thing standing in their way, whereas the Chiefs have always felt they were in the way of the Bills.
Mm-hmm. The Commanders feel kind of like the team who's ahead of schedule, who just kind of got there by accident, kind of like the Bengals did back, you know, early on. And like, what is that, Burrow's second year?
Yeah.
Like they got to the Super Bowl, but they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. I mean, you hope that I hope that the Eagles defense can rattle Jaden Daniels enough in his youth to get to him and shake him up. Their win over Detroit was awesome, but like Detroit scared me the most because their offense was so incredible that at any given time they can put up 40 points and it's like you become in a race. But their defense was always their weakness. So, like,
yeah,
not exactly the end of, you know, I don't know. I'm hoping for Eagles Bills.
Yeah.
I don't want the Eagles to face the Chiefs in the Super Bowl because I don't need that rematch to come haunt me. But I am optimistically pessimistic, if that makes sense. Like, I don't let this stuff get me down. I'm always just like, there's next year. Oh, we'll keep going. But I also don't expect my teams to ever win.
Yeah, we're just at this point where my team's not involved. I either want really good games or a really good storyline.
So you have really enjoyed two snow games back-to-back?
Yeah, I enjoy snow games.
Oh, God, I thought they were terrible.
I enjoy the look of them.
The look was cool. But by the second half of the Eagles game, it was so sloppy. But that Saquon run that ended up being super important was amazing. Just him busting out in the snow. I mean, I keep going back to the clip of the Giants owner being like, if he goes to Philly, I'm going to lose sleep. Like, I'm sorry. Just that there's not a bigger, better clip to have out there. And yeah, Scott pointing out the Eagles blew a big lead to the Commanders last time they played. I will point out, and he points out, Hurts left the game and the Eagles were still in position to win, but both Saquon and then Smith dropped wide open passes for a first down that would have won the game. So I think the Eagles are the better team, but it's not like the Commanders snuck into the playoffs. They had a great record.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who would have thought the last two NFC teams were going to be from the NFC East?
It's the best team. It was the best division in the NFC.
Apparently,
minus Dallas.
I mean, you thought it was going to be the North. We had the Lions.
That's true, but Darnold got proven to be a.
Yeah, he got exposed against the Lions in the last regular season game, and that broke him, I think.
And then he got exposed majorly in the playoffs. And the Sixers aren't going to go on a run. They've broken my spirit. They no longer are a basketball team. They can just stop playing altogether.
Yep. Trade away everyone.
Honestly, I'm almost at that point. It's like, if they're healthy, they look great, but they're not healthy and they can't stay healthy. And if you're not going to make the playoffs, what is it? What good does that do you? If you want to limp into the playoffs and say, like, we're going to milk it so that we have a healthy team come playoffs, I can live with that. But I just don't know if they make the playoffs. They shouldn't have paid Paul George. Paul George is old and getting hurt. It was a stupid signing at the time. I have to like it just because I had to like it because I wanted them to win. But I actually knew it was a bad call. It was never the guy I wanted.
Hot 76ers talk.
I mean, we're just breaking in. We can get to some wrestling talk. We've been a little while since we saw him. We got Big G wondering what Minnesota's going to do with QB. It's not going to be Darnold. It depends on what Darnold demands.
I'll give the shot to JJ first.
Yeah. Though if Darnold wants to come at a reasonable price, I think they pay it. Just to be like, we know you can at least win regular season games. If we need you, you're there type deal. But he has to come at a reasonable price. If he expects to get starter money, then no. I don't know. Did you see the two big news things of the week?
Probably. Which ones are you talking about?
Well, we can go happy or sad. Which one do you want to go with?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a tough one. Is there no melancholy one?
I guess it's not even really sad. It's just annoying. So happy and annoying.
Let's go annoying first. That way we can go sad as we go into commercial and start the show.
Well, no, it's happy and annoying. Those are the two. So it'd be annoying then happy or?
So annoying. That's so annoying.
Okay. Ricky Starks news where he requested his release and they refused to grant it, even though they're not going to use him.
Okay. Yep. I saw headlines about that.
That's very annoying. Now, my argument is, and yes, Big G, the Eagles did go back to Wentz after Foles won them the Super Bowl. However, Wentz was MVP candidate the year they won the Super Bowl and got hurt in one of the last weeks of the year. So it's not like he was benched because of poor play. He was expected to win MVP. He just never was the same after that. But anyway, I will say AEW very rarely, and it's actually only been a couple special occasions, very rarely do they cut people. Because my argument is, if the company cuts people and doesn't have to honor the contract, then why do wrestlers have to honor the contract? Mm. But if the company doesn't cut people, then the wrestlers have to honor. I just want things to go to be the same way.
Yeah,
it's the same problem I have with sports. Either both sides have to honor it, or no side has to honor it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more in line with, you know, you honor the contract, and unless there's guarantees in that contract that says how you're going to be used or how many days you're going to work, you know, you just have to deal with whatever the employer gives you, I feel like. But I kind of wish there was a way where you had some mediator that could help you maybe either buy out of the contract somehow, or, you know, have some concessions where you can, you know, have some kind of meet in the middle between the two parties.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a thing. Well, the only difference is because I was going to say, okay, you get out of the contract and you it's like, well, right, you can get out of the contract, but you just can't go, say, WWE. Like, we'll let you out, but you got to go to. Sure. But AEW lets you wrestle indie anyway. So, like, why do you need to get out of the contract? They let you in. They, like, you really only can't go one place. If they cut people regularly, and really, I can only think of a couple that didn't make sense. Like, they cut Anthony Henry at one point, then they brought him right back. There's just a couple where you're like, overall, they don't cut people. They tend to just let their contracts run out without being used. So I'm kind of like, if they're going to honor their full contracts, you have to honor their, like, you don't have to, but like, but they have cut some guys that I don't understand. So it does seem like they don't fully agree to that principle. Like, to me, the only reason you cut a guy from a contract is he violates some kind of rule, or he gets in trouble, or something bad happens. You don't come because you're not using them. You don't come because you don't like. Something had to have happened. But otherwise, because like I said, otherwise, who's it's not fair to make it a one-sided deal. Like, both or none. That, I guess that's just how I feel about it. Like, either both sides do it or neither side. Obviously, I know the internet side of things is favoring him, saying, hey, you let him go. And I understand that. Again, it's a tough call. I also don't know what's going on behind scenes.
Yeah.
Why isn't he being used? Like, we don't know any of that. You know, he was getting pushed for a little while there. And then it just stopped. So, like, did something happen? Are we ever going to find a story? Like,
and if they are at an impasse where they know they're not going to work out a new agreement with each other, then it's not uncommon for a promotion or something like that not to highlight that talent. So, like, why? I mean, the old school way might be to have them, you know, take a pin on the way out. Anymore, I think the way is just like, oh, we freeze out for X amount of months, so hopefully people forget how hot you were.
Yeah. Also, though, like, reading the articles, he asked them not to pick up his extension, and they did. That's where I have an issue. Like, again, I know it's negotiated, the extension's there, it's the right of the company, but if the guy's saying, like, just don't pick up this extension, you're not using me, let it die out. At that point, let it go. Like, the extension there, I'm more of one of those people that, like, the intent of an extension is that if a company's using you and they like you, they run the extension so they don't have to offer you this ginormous new contract, that they're able to, say, keep you at a reasonable price while they use you. If they're not using you, why are they picking up a contract? An extent, like, it just that seems a little more spiteful. And Erickson is TK just petty, maybe.
Probably similar ways that, like, when people get franchise tags.
but see, franchise tags usually because you intend to keep the guy, though.
Or you're trying to keep him away from a competitor or a rival.
Yeah, most of the time, but that's true. But most of the time, those guys have to play at least. Here, the guy's not playing. The guy's just sitting at home. It's going to be interesting to see when his contract's probably coming up in the spring, what he does. I firmly believe, I mean, I think everyone kind of agrees, he'll probably just go to WWE and he'll probably crush it there. He's got a lot of talent. You know, Ophelia has a good point. It's easy to say petty, but when he's lenient, he catches insults. And when he sticks to the contracts, he catches insults. And that's a good point. Like, TK, and that's about TK. Mm-hmm. I mean, TK, when people are like, oh, he's too much, he doesn't want to be a boss, he wants to be a friend. And then when he's a boss, they're like, you're an asshole. It's like, well, what am I supposed to do here? You know? And again, we don't know what happened behind. I don't know what happened behind scenes, why things soured.
Well, I mean, not apple to apple, but also in the news, you know, all that, the Britt Baker stuff, right? Like,
oh, why I forgot about that. Yeah.
She wasn't on TV, and, you know, people were speculating, oh, her contract running up, and it sounds like her contract isn't up for a while either, but she's just not being used right now.
There had been long-standing rumors. Like, the funny thing is, you never really heard rumors of Ricky being a problem in the locker room. Like, that never came out. It seems to be something between Ricky and TK. There had been murmurs for a while that Freed, I'll go to the Freed thing, but I like Freed's point that's like, Brian Cage is off TV for months and then somehow he's now like a full-time. Sometimes as a contract comes up, they negotiate themselves into actually getting used, whatever. But Britt, there had always been murmurs that was a bit of a problem backstage. Again, I'm not there. I don't know what's going on, but there had always at least been hints and whispers, and apparently there's, based on the reporting, there's more truth to that than, you know, and that she had finally just worn out her welcome with Tony and was just like, we're just not going to use you. I will say, it's easy to be a problem in the locker room when your women's division is barely staying above water and you're the only reason it is, to your women's division has a ton of talent and you're not even one of the top five.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I try not to speak about things I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not in the back. It just sucks because, you know, she has a character that's fun on TV. I'd like to see her on TV. But if she's a problem in the locker room, I also see Tony being like, why am I going to reward this? You're making my life harder.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe to say that a change of scenery would be good for both of them, no matter where they end up, what they do. Like, I feel like it's probably best for all parties involved just to hopefully move on and go their separate ways and prosper.
Yeah, I'm one of those. Like, if you're never going to, I will say this, like, I don't like just handing the, and I didn't even rephrase this because I actually don't care as a fan. For a fan, I love it. For a fan, I wish people were just constantly switching companies all the time. I think it's awesome. I'm going into the, if I were a manager, like a company manager, not like a wrestling manager, I wouldn't like just handing my competition quality wrestlers that the only reason I'm not using them is because they're a problem to me. But at the same point, when I take off that hat, I understand, like, you're not using them, just let them go. You know, I think that would, I don't want to say that would, you know, probably garner you some goodwill with other wrestlers, knowing that, like, you're willing to let them go when they're satisfied. But that also does set the precedent that anytime someone's dissatisfied, all they have to do is be a bit of a problem, and then you'll cut them. And it's like, you don't want that to happen either, because people are going to be dissatisfied for a lot of stupid reasons.
Yeah, it's a case-by-case scenario. Yeah.
I mean, hi, Jesse. Kate's not here, so I could be nice to you. It just sucks. There's a lot of good things going on with AEW. I personally feel like they're starting to write a lot of the things here. There's still some flaws. And if you listen to last week's episode of the Mark Order, we got a little more negative than we usually do. Drew from Firmly AEW just brought his negativity on screen, and we just couldn't fight past it.
Classic Drew.
Classic Drew.
Yeah.
But I do think they're writing a lot of the things that I had. Right, Jesse? Big time is big timing. I do think they are righting a lot of the wrongs. So
what's the happy news you want to talk about?
Dynasty, AEW Dynasty is going to be in Philly.
Oh,
for me, that's happy. I say this and there's just as much of a chance I don't go.
I'm going to say you probably still won't go.
No, but still I'm going to pretend that I am. And that's good news for me.
Is it a Saturday show or a Sunday show?
Google.
I know Kate's gonna make it go. Kate will probably go, and then she'll be like,
"Yeah, Kate will go." And it's literally a half hour, not even from me.
I would come to Philly and slap you for not going.
It's a Sunday show, so I don't like that.
At least you're close to home.
I am close to home. I probably would take off the next day anyway, though.
Well, you get Dynasty. I just get a Dynamite and Collision taping in Omaha.
Do you really?
Yeah, March 19th.
Is that the first time they're going to Omaha?
Well, they were in Council Bluffs last fall when I went there. So they are going to be running the worst little arena we have in Omaha.
How many people does it seat?
Good question. Probably like 5,000, maybe.
So I said it last week, two things that I like about these small arenas that they're running, three things that I like about these small arenas they're running. One, makes the crowd seem more engaged because you're not empty. Two, the small arenas tend to have a cooler visual because they're usually like special use buildings. They're not like, once you get to like 15 to 20,000 seat arenas, they're all kind of built the same way. Mm-hmm. They all like look the same. So I like and three, they start hitting markets they don't typically hit.
Yeah, the capacity of this arena is about 4,300 when you have an end-up stage, like a stage on one side, no character entrance. So,
and I think Leah Core is like between 7,500 and 10,000, something like that, where they're doing Dynasty. So they are smart that they're Jesse, that was an old people joke. Jesse saying Mutual of Omaha, that was an old person joke, Jesse.
I work in the Mutual of Omaha, in the Mutual of Omaha building in Omaha, in one of them. So,
oh, God. But yeah, you know, I liked it. Like I said, the smaller venues, and they should go to, like, I think, like, being down, like, they were in Tennessee tonight. I think being in these places is smart for them. Those are good wrestling markets. They may not be able to sustain, like, huge arenas, but if you're not playing them because you can't sell them out right now, go to.
You don't need to. You have TV money now. You don't need to fill 15,000 seat arenas.
No, you just need to make it look cool. And they're starting to do that again. So I appreciate that. So that was kind of the news and notes. So what we'll do is we'll take a quick commercial break about all these. See, we're on the Shining Wizards Network. And there's a lot of great shows on the Shining Wizards Network. And I'll plug our shirts at the end because I'm being lazy. We're on the Shining Wizards Network. There's a lot of great shows on the Shining Wizards Network, but I don't really want to tell you about them because I just don't want to. So I'm going to let them tell you about them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on this commercial overlay. You see that right here?
Beautiful.
And now I'm going to hit play.
We'd like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday night to listen to The Shining Wizards. If you'd like to continue to support us outside of listening, we've got a few ways for you to do that. If you shop at Amazon, go over to amazon.shiningwizards.com, do your shopping as usual, and when you make your purchase, a little bit of that purchase price will go back to support the show. If you like to wear t-shirts, merch.shiningwizards.com will take you to our Pro Wrestling Tees store, where we've got over a dozen great designs from over 11 years of professional wrestling podcasting. You can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast, where each and every week we call out your name as one of our show producers, and the more you support us, the more things that you're entitled to receive, and believe me, they are fantastic. If you can't support us monetarily, if you don't shop at Amazon, that's absolutely fine. Continue to listen to us wherever you listen to us on the World Wide Web, and make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe, do all that good stuff. It doesn't cost you anything, helps us out, and we can continue to bring you the love fest that is The Shining Wizards.
What's up, folks? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, inviting all of you to check out the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Join us as we cover all things current in the world of pro wrestling, as well as paying homage to the old school, the squared circle. So listen in and find out why we are the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. Find us on all social media platforms and anywhere you get your podcast from. And as always, we are the proudest members of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things and not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events, brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Broadcast Podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Broadcast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcast, CastBox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions, and cranked a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is Radioactive Metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder. Because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
I'm Kevin Rogue.
I'm Al Day.
And we're a couple of down under pounders that co-host Rogue Day Dots, an action figure collecting podcast where we talk about, well, just about anything that tickles our fancy at any given moment.
We're grumpy old men, and sometimes people get on our nerves. And when you get on our nerves, guess what? You get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn, asshole! We also go on a little bit of a mission. We go back and we're grading every wrestling figure line that's out there. I'm talking LJNs. I'm talking Jacks. I'm talking Hasbros. Who doesn't like a little Hulkaplex? It's a Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production found on the Shining Wizards Network.
I'm Duke Bags.
Kevin Rogue.
And together we are the co-hosts of your Duke and Rogue. If you want to hear about some terrible wrestling shows, we got you covered.
Well, we talk about good ones, too.
We're currently talking about the death of WCW.
I know what we're fucking talking about. Sometimes we get guest spots, like from the Taskmaster. I like to listen to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast. They're funny guys. I like when they talk about the Narch plows. I like Narch plows. That's a good move. And I like the Dungeon of Doom. You know, sometimes I call my butt the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
Let me tell you a little bit about my favorite wrestling podcast. All right. It's a podcast with two men. Two men, Duke Bags, Kevin Rowe. They talk about professional wrestling. It's a man's sport. All right. And who better to talk about a man's sport than Duke Bags? Oklahoma.
Once in a while, Vince Russo stops by.
Bro, you piece of shit! If you're not listening to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast in the back with the boys, you piece of shit, I don't know what you're doing.
You got a slight one in there?
If you're a man, you're talking about something only a man can do. You're talking about a slight one in there. Bro, take the time to slide one in there. All right, bro, you piece of shit. Slide one in there. A Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production that you can find on the Shining Wizards Network.
And we are back. So we're here to cover the January 22nd edition of Dynamite. It came from someplace in Tennessee. I forget where in Tennessee. Knoxville, Tennessee. I just know Tennessee because it's JEFFJARRET. He brought up Tennessee.
I thought maybe you're just a big Arrested Development music act fan. Remember that song, Tennessee?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have pulled that reference out, but okay.
Go ahead, Mr.
Digging it.
Yeah.
I liked the show mostly. There's a couple parts I had issues with, but for the most part, I liked the show. Joe, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm in the middle. I thought it was good, especially for the fact that a lot of things had to be kind of rearranged and plans had to be altered due to travel issues for some. So, like, we're going to get the Samoa Joe, Nick Wayne match because of travel issues. We saw some, you know, longer segments to try to fill time tonight. But the wrestling itself was good. You know, there's plenty of matches here that we'll talk about that I thought were really good in ring action, except for the ending of the show, which we'll get to. But yeah, other than that, it was a solid episode of Dynamite, all things considered.
I mean, it started out very hot. You had Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega in the ring together, having a little chat. It looks like they're not going to get along. Kenny's point is like, you stabbed me, you broke my neck. You thought you were better than me. You're not better than me. I'm not going to help you, basically. But then Don Callis appears on stage, and I don't have a lot to say of their promo. I don't think their promo really matters based on what happens after, to be quite honest. That's why I kind of blew by it. It's what happens after was awesome, but that's really the thing. Don Callis comes out. Well, of course they go right at Don Callis. But then Takeshita comes out and Fletcher comes out and Omega and them fight Takeshita and Fletcher, and they're kicking their butts. But then Brian Cage and Lance Archer come out. There is a brawl. It's really hard to describe a brawl. Again, I'm not good at that. It was awesome. I really enjoyed this brawl. I thought it was actually one of those that felt real, But you know what I'm saying? It had like an actual, as opposed to what we get from the Death Riders that feels stale and boring, this one felt like it actually had some energy to it. The camera work was what I noticed, because there was one time where Ospreay and Lance Archer went up the crowd, and the camera had to go around the side to the back of the stands to see that Ospreay had been tossed to the ground, and just to see the camera run to catch you, I thought was really cool camera work. You don't usually see that. Both AEW and WWE are a little too polished sometimes, where they have the camera there waiting. So I thought it was cool to see the camera like physically have to run to go catch it. It ends with the good guys doing some high fly dives off the various spots in the arena and then climbing the metal thing that they always have at these arenas and Kenny saying, you know, I'm sorry, Ospreay, you were right. I owe you an apology. We could team up to kick some butt. Now let's get down. I'm afraid of heights. Well, he does his catchphrase and he says, let's get down. I'm afraid of heights. So, Joe, what did you think of the brawl to open the show?
I'm glad with how it ended, because I was worried of... I've been getting accustomed to liking starting Dynamite with a match. So going back to having this talking segment, I'm like, are you going to have a talking segment where they get interrupted? But when you had the brawl where they had to, you know, forge a bond due to the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing, I thought that was a nice way to really liven up the crowd to open the show. The fact that it felt it was more than just a usual brawl that we see sometimes. It felt like a mini Anarchy in the Arena type of match, almost, where all sorts of wild things beyond just, you know, elbow collar and punching each other outside the arena. They were jumping off stuff, throwing each other into walls, throwing people through merch tables. I mean, it was like a match, and I thought it was really cool. I'm looking forward to the tag match between, you know, seeing Ospreay and Omega on the same team with Fletcher and Takeshita. It'll be amazing. I'm still kind of left wondering who else will have to get to help them, because there's no way that Archer and Cage don't get involved. So I feel like you have to even up the sides a little bit.
Yeah, I wasn't doubting you. I'm trying to think. I don't know who they get to even it up, but you're right. Archer and Cage have to get involved. I love gang warfare, I always say in wrestling, but that is the downside to gang warfare, is that if you don't have even upsides, the heels are always going to pull in their
we have Mark Davis out there, right, still? He could help out.
Yeah, but he doesn't... Where's he been?
I know. I don't know what happened to that whole... You brought him back and...
But yeah, you have him. You'd have to still pull in a fourth. I don't know who it would be. But I like you said, the brawl almost felt like a mini match, like an Anarchy in the Arena. And that's, I guess, what I was trying to say. Like, we're going to talk about, we're going to start it, because I want to get to this. You have this brawl. Jesse's saying he'll, but yeah, I assume Mark Davis will show up at the Australia show, but still, you have this brawl. Is Ibushi, Big G saying, isn't Kota Ibushi out there? If Ibushi's healthy, I know there was some issues at some point. But you start with this brawl that everyone universally loved, is from what I could see. You then go, and I'm going to scroll through my notes to the main event, because, again, normally wouldn't skip like that, but
it's neither everyone, which is bounce around.
Yeah, it's our show. Plus, it's such a the dichotomy, is that the word I want to use? Sure. Just contrast and compare the two styles. So our main event was Adam Copeland versus Pac, which actually was a fun match. I didn't mind the match. I thought they did pretty well. Pac's a very good wrestler, and Copeland still has it. So like,
and I know how much you love stories, and they told the whole next story throughout the whole match with Pac.
I liked it. I liked that Pac was like it has been acknowledged. Moxley said it in a promo earlier. Moxley's promo earlier was basically like, I broke Danielson's neck. I put Darby Allin on the shelf. I like that. Like, I like that he's coming out here saying, this is what I've done to people. Oh, cool. Jesse's saying I used dichotomy correctly. Perfect. This is what you said. This is what I've done to people. Like, I've always wanted Mox to at least, if you're not going to have this overarching story where you're like, we beat up everyone. If you're only going to beat up select people, I want his story to be like, look who I keep putting on the shelf. And they're not going to do that. But at least here, he tried to do a mini of that. Well, come through to the match. And the story of the match is, like, as you said, Pac targeting Copeland's neck. I love that. Obviously, Copeland was going to win, and he won with a TKO. Then we have the inevitable Death Riders attack. But right before that, we go to the back where the Death Riders have beat up Rock and Roll Express and concertoed Ricky Morton. But they've also duct taped Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood to the chairs, tied and duct taped them. And it just looks so stupid. Like, I'm sorry, they would have been better off beaten up. Like, what are you doing tying them to chairs? Like, it just,
sometimes it's more sinister to make them watch their legend idols get beaten up and feel helpless. But I get that part. They're trying to, like,
it looked stupid. It just looked dumb. I don't mind leaving them helpless or whatever, but literally the visual to me looked almost comical. It looked like what you would see in a bad TV show or bad movie. We're like,
yeah, you could have beaten him up and then just change him to the fence or something.
Yeah. Or locked him in a room. That's been an old one where you lock him in their locker room and they can't get out. So of course the Death Riders are beaten up. Copeland then Switchblade of all people makes a save, which I'm okay with. It keeps him in the story. And I don't want his story to be going to Yuta. I want it to stay on Moxley, but at least he's staying around the belt. But Yuta comes in, hits low blows them. They beat the good guys down. Death Riders walk out. And there was no energy to this. Everyone knew what was going to happen. And at no point did anyone think that the good guys were going to win this. Even when Switchblade came out, I'm like, all right, so he's just going to get beat down now. It's a repeat of what we've seen for the last however many months. It's really nothing new anytime, except for the comical time guys to chairs. And you compare that to the brawl at the beginning and all the energy and the way it felt. And I'm like, how can you do it so well here and so poorly here?
Yeah, because the one thing ends very formulaic, where it's just, the one face comes down at a time to try to take on, four, five, six guys, and it comes down without even a weapon. And maybe it's that they've done this so many times now in back-to-back weeks that we are just conditioned to be very apathetic toward it, where what we got in the opening segment felt a little bit more fresh and renewed.
And that's what it is, I think, a little bit. Like, no one predicted that opening segment brawl, whereas everyone and their mother knew what was going to happen at the end of the show. Big G's asking, where was Hobbs? Hobbs is going to fight Big Bill in a parking lot.
I actually thought Jarrett would come out and try to help, since he's had that favorite Plyo and he had called out Mox earlier.
I wouldn't have liked it, but it would have made more sense.
Come out with the guitar, start swinging around, you know.
I'm just getting, they've done nothing with these beat towns. It's just repetitive. If we're going, I'm gonna name two. It reminds me of, I'm using other companies, not because I think it's bad, just because trying to get other references. It reminds me of the Bloodline at its worst. It reminds me of the NWO at its worst, where like there's just nothing happening. You've just hit the repeat button. I don't know what they need to do to fix this. It's just not hitting. We've all suggested ways they could fix it, and they're not going to do any of them. One way I suggested, but I've been thinking about it, because this isn't like me trying to book wrestling. This is what I would do if I was watching a show and like what would I want to see in this plot to make it better? Maybe you have a faction actually, like Copeland's faction clearly isn't the one for whatever reason. They're just Raid FTR just doesn't have that feel to it for whatever reason. Maybe you have one that's like almost matching Death Riders in violence. Yeah. And like
I think everyone thought the story was the Elite to come back, because
that's what I want.
What kind of like a-hole the Bus can be. We've seen how violent Hangman can be. You know, we know what Kane will go through going through all the things he's gone through this year. Like, so they have that edge and their AEW originals to topple the Death Riders. And that's the story that makes the most sense, I think, to everyone. Whether or not we're ever going to get that, if that's the direction they want to go, or if they're trying to, you know, pace out time for something else, I don't know.
Yeah, it's they need to do something. Scott saying stop letting talent book their own storylines. I mean, I fully agree with that. I think you give the story to talent and let them build the intricacies within it, but I don't understand why you would let them book their own. Fernando saying the Hurt Syndicate has a more clear direction than the Death Riders. Oh, yeah. We'll get into the Hurt Syndicate. That's true. I'm not disagreeing.
Their direction is they hurt people.
Yeah. Well, you know what the thing is? Hurt people hurt people. So who hurt them?
Good question.
Actually, since we're skipping around and this is our show, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
The Hurt Syndicate was facing Private Party for the AEW Tag Team Championships. And they won the tag team championships in maybe just a smidge above what we call a squash, just a smidge. They pretty much dominated. Like this, the story of this was basically like Private Party just didn't stand a chance. I have said before, and I'll say it again, I love the Hurt Syndicate. I'm excited to see them with the belts. I would have liked Private Party to have a better run.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. I felt like Private Party just felt like a transitional camp where they didn't have anything really too memorable that from a fan aspect. If you're watching the program, like I can't remember how many title defenses they've had, but they just didn't feel like they got the proper creative for being tag team champions.
No. And you know, Jesse Ozark saying you could tell they were going to lose just based on the look on Zay's face as they walked to the ring. Same look she'd have when she lost her belt. I mean, that's true. You just knew. Fernando saying AEW dropped the ball in the Private Party ring. They never felt important. Absolutely.
I will say that I initially thought when I saw the match was second on the card, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a DQ finish or something's going to happen. Like, there's no way you can do a title change. No. Second match of the card, this early on Random Dynamite, I figured they'd save it for, you know, a pay-per-view or something. But again, that kind of goes to show, like, and then like I said, it was almost a squash.
I mean, that's what it felt like. So there's a couple of things here. If you didn't have significant opponents for Private Party, you could have had them do basically an open challenge. That has that saves a lot of title reigns where you're like, they don't even have to be beating the best people. But if they're just out there every week defending it and having great matches, people will be like, you know, that was a fun reign to show how good they are. And then they, and then the Hurt Business, Hurt, I can save it, but Hurt Syndicate could have challenged them, and that could have been the end of it, and that would have been fine. But they didn't do that. They didn't defend nearly enough. There's a story you could tell out of this, where like, I don't know how you tell the story, because the way they won the belt, it's almost a similar story, but you'd have to take it to another level. But I'm basically thinking like minus Mickey dying, Rocky III. Where the Private Party almost got cocky because they won the belts and they thought they were better than they were. And here comes the Hurt Syndicate along and a real fight, you know, real fighters, and puts them in their place. So now Private Party has to get the eye of the tiger and go train and do their own thing. And then they come back like, we won, we accomplished all we thought we would, and we thought that made us better than we were. And we stopped caring, we stopped training, we stopped trying. And then they come, like, it's the only thing I could think of, because why would you have it this way?
I feel like we thought that similar thought when the Acclaimed won the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
They never really changed until...
I don't think they will. I'm just saying it's something you could do. And Fernando's right. AEW has a history of not successfully following up on big moments. That is one of their flaws. The problem is they don't have a good history of following up on champions.
Yeah. They should tell the story of the chase. The chase is always the easiest, almost the easiest story to tell sometimes.
Yeah. And we were talking about this last week. It's probably once you, I don't know if you were still here when we talked. It seems to be the flaw in every company that booking a champion is the hardest thing to do. Because you look across the board, AEW struggles for most of its champs. There's a couple that hit, but like for the most part, struggles. WWE, you look at them right now. Name one champion you think is having like a really good run.
Yeah.
Gunther had one when he was Intercontinental Champion. But as a world champion, not nearly as, it's not nearly the same reign. Cody's reign is kind of sucked. Nothing against the wrestlers; it's the stories around them. And AEW has the same problem. It does seem to be the biggest issue that, not just he's saying Tony, but Tony's is done. I'm just saying currently, you are going to hit like, there are ones that occasionally do well, but I just feel like. It's especially as a babyface, it's often very difficult to book a good champion. But just in general, they all seem to struggle. I don't know why.
With the Hurts and the Kit now being the champions, how? And I'm watching the match. One, you know, like I said, they kind of basically dominated the match. Two, they were way more over than Private Party were as the heels. I mean, you had people chanting, you know, their theme song at them. I'm like, how? What do you do with the Hurt Syndicate? Because they're supposed to be this big, imposing heel group, but all the fans are going to want to cheer them.
So the Hurt Syndicate was the right team to win in the sense of, like, again, I wanted more out of the Private Party run. Absolutely. We'll say that to the forever. But the Hurt Syndicate is the hot team. You wanted to capitalize why they were hot. You're going to basically, I wouldn't change a thing. If they get cheers, they get cheers. My biggest problem with clearly I love wrestling. My biggest problem with wrestling characters are that, and this is actually something I've really loved. AEW's been pretty good about this. And actually so is WWE in recent, so I can't, this is, but, look at someone like Swerve. Swerve's not going to be my example. Swerve was a heel who was really cool and everyone loved him, and he turned face. And he only changed a slight bit. He still was psychotic. He still would do things you shouldn't do. Like he's still evil, but he's just not hating on the fans. So like all you have to do is remove the hatred of the fans and like be the same, because that's what we cheer. I hate when wrestling is like, oh, you're going face now? We're going to change everything that people liked about you. And so, like, with the Hurt Syndicate, as long as they're not coming out and shitting on... I mean, if you want them to shit on the crowd, they can, if you want to keep them heels. But otherwise, change nothing. Just let... characters can be great characters, whether they're heel or face. It doesn't really change... I know the theory is, like, oh, we want the crowd to cheer for the good guy to win and the bad guy to lose. But it is okay if occasionally the crowd cheers for the bad guy to win and the good guy to lose.
Well, yeah, you can easily play, if you're a bad guy, you can easily play off as like, yeah, you should be cheering for me, respecting us, because you know we're the standard, we're that good. You should have that arrogance behind you like a heel. So
I agree. Now, BG asked a question that we didn't address, but we should. The Acclaimed breakup. Obviously, they're done.
About a year late.
Yeah, that's what we're really was going to say. I don't know what they're going to do with Max Caster. I don't think he's going to the Hurt Syndicate. They seem to turn that story completely away. I'm excited for what Bowens can do because Bowens is so skilled. But yeah, that's a year late.
Yeah, I want like have their little match, have their feud, and then separate them so they're not, you know, put someone on RH, put like Max on RH. And
yeah, like
down there, and then have
I got to figure out ROH in general, but
yeah,
I get they were still getting crowd reactions, but they're just the shtick had worn. They never evolved, which is part of the problem. Like they,
yeah, you can only sit so long, and then it starts.
Yeah, but like you look at a team like again, I go across companies, but you look at a team like the New Day. Look what they're doing with them right now. Like how interesting that story is. They were going to break them up, and now they're basically staying together because of the Big E thing. I mean, I know Big E's on the outs, but like my point is that team has evolved through so many iterations. And yes, there's been similar things throughout. There's been a theme of certain but overall, they've basically stayed very similar. And then they've done their singles stuff. But with the Acclaimed, they never evolved. They always just stayed the same. And it was like, and they never went singles. Like they could have let Bowens go and have his singles run. They could have yeah, we're still friends. We're still a team when we need each other, but they didn't. And I think that just wore out their welcome way quicker.
Yeah.
Speaking of worn out welcomes. We come back and Jeff Jarrett is being interviewed with his guitar over his shoulder. And then Karen Jarrett walks up, and I actually appreciate what they tried to do here. Karen Jarrett said she was mad at him for basically sinking down to MJF's level. He's better than that. He doesn't need to do that anymore. Jeff comes to the ring. I think the person he used, like I'm hoping this is a true story, which is the only reason he included the name of Jarrett. Now I know they're also in Tennessee, so you're trying to, but like, he tells the story where Jerry Lawler basically yelled at him because in a match he sunk down to the villain's level and started mouthing. And Jerry Lawler is saying like you don't sink down to their level, and that's Jeff Jarrett's way of saying like I'm not going to play Max's game anymore. I'm going to be above it. I'm going to be better, which I think is a response to how poorly his promo was taken last week, where people are like, you're supposed to be the good guy and you're saying things that you shouldn't be saying. Then he calls out, he says he wants Mox. And I know people are having issues with this. Well, hold on. And then in response to that, Claudio Castagnoli comes out and attacks him and basically says like, if you don't get to Mox unless you get through me, which I love that. I will say like, that is a cool new character thing of like, you don't get him if you don't get through me. And I think that's just a cool thing. And then as Castagnoli's walking away, Jeff Jarrett stands back up and says, okay, we're going to fight, basically. So I have overall this again. I don't mind the Jeff Jarrett stuff overall. Like I don't have problems that every now and again you have like a, for lack of a better term, like a break, like a guy who's just like, you know, it's almost like a bathroom break, but you know, he's kind of breaking up the show a little bit, kind of like, but two things here. I don't know if using a Jerry Lawler story is the best thing, because he's not exactly someone people want to be referenced. And honestly, he's just, Though a lot of his indiscretions, that's a nice way of phrasing what he's done, but a lot of his issues aren't well known to the public. So I also appreciate that like he's not quite viewed as poorly as like others, but he's just a relic of the past that you don't really need to reference to get over. So Fernando saying, sorry, I have a big issue with Jeff Jarrett having a world championship storyline. This is my point. This is what I'm going to say is I don't think Jeff Jarrett has a world championship storyline. I think the storyline is Jeff Jarrett wants to have a world championship storyline. And if he goes out and beats Claudio and then gets a match with Mox, okay, I'm going to have an issue with that. Actually, let me walk that back. I don't want him beating Claudio. So my issue is if he beats Claudio. I don't want him beating Claudio. If he were to just have a match with Mox, if he beats Claudio by like disqualification or something, fine. If he has a match with Mox on a collision or a dynamite, it's a one-off and it's not a thing. What did we really lose? I don't want him to actually have a real storyline. What I want him to have is his desire to have it and then not get it. What are your thoughts?
Oh my. So I read the promo kind of like you did when you talked about how it was really their attempt to kind of walk him back from last week, where his attempt of doing an MJF promo fell flat and missed the mark by 10 miles at least. I thought using Jerry Lawler as the voice of morality saying not to think to that level felt really hollow and weird, because if you know Jerry Lawler, just even him as a wrestler, like he was a dirty wrestler. Like he was always the bad guy for a lot of it, and then speaking unhandedly type of tactics. And I thought that was a weird thing for him to be like, yeah, he's a guy who told me not to think to that level and be better than that. I understand Jarrett won a title match. You know, that was like what he said. He said that I'm going to be wrestling. I signed an extension, a new contract, or whatever. Now he wants gold. And I'm with you. I don't want to see him get gold. I think it's a better storyline if you see the old veteran who just can't get it done anymore. And, you have to have that realization. So I'm hoping that Claudio just beats the brakes off of him. I fear that he won't. And I always thought that, Claudio says that you have to go through him to get to Mox. I always thought you had to go through Marina to get through Mox, because she seems to be like the final boss before Mox.
Yeah, that's true. She is really the final boss. But yeah, my hope is exactly what you said. I hope he beats the piss out of him. That's... Or I would be okay, because it won't matter in the long run. I would be okay with Jarrett looking like he's going to win and then MJF screwing him over. Yeah. Because I actually kind of enjoy an MJF Jarrett storyline, except for the shitty promo, because it's just kind of like, who better to ruin a retirement run than MJF? Like, that is like an MJF move. But I don't want him to actually have it. I don't want Jarrett in the title picture. I just want him talking like he's in the title picture. Like, yeah. I want him to want to be.
And speaking of MJF, so you want to talk about his promo?
Yeah, we might as well just go right to him. I was thinking about that. Hold on. Gotta look at my notes.
It didn't do anything for me. I understand that it would have made more sense for them to do face to face, but if you're trying to fill out time, sure. I kind of zoned out during it. It felt like a run-of-the-mill promo.
I do appreciate Jesse in the chat saying our carnies like highlighters. There can only be one. His promo basically being like, Jeff Jarrett, wrestling's passed you by. No one loves you. These fans don't love you. Stay with me. You better either cut a deal with me, or you're in trouble. Like you said, it would be better as a vignette, like a real quick vignette that pops up on screen. However, the interesting thing here is that technically MJF interfered in a match. He interrupted the intros to a match between Hangman Adam Page and a wrestler named Tyler Shoop. It's basically a squash match. So MJF came out before Hangman could be introduced. So at the end of MJF's promo, Hangman comes out and they have a stare down. And Hangman is now psycho. He's not the Hangman of the past. Hangman's basically saying, get out of the ring. And MJF gets out of the ring. That was interesting.
We are, I think, getting to see the turn in Hangman in this character arc as far as where he's going, based on this interaction and then based off of what they talked about with him and Christopher Daniels when Christopher Daniels comes out.
Yeah, so Hangman wins his match in what could only be described as a squashy squash, squash, squash. Then comes Christopher Daniels, and Hangman marches down, basically being like, do you want me to hurt you again? I'm gonna do it. Daniels being like, you hurt me so bad, I can't wrestle anymore. I'm done. And there have been reports that Christopher Daniels is officially retired. An amazing career. I get why they didn't. You couldn't announce it ahead of time because this is the story they're telling. And I respect Christopher Daniels for using his retirement match for that. Would I like him to come back and have one more just to be like, and get his actual like retirement match in? Fine. But that's down the road. I do appreciate that. Like he had, like that was a nice, like he's using it in a fun storyline. What's interesting here is that he apologized to Hangman for saying like, every time I tried to help you, it was like pouring gasoline on fire. And then you said what you said, and I let my pride get in the way, and we had our fight. He's because you won. You won. And Hangman doesn't seem like he knows how to take that. Because Hangman's craziness is all about the fact that he doesn't ever feel like he wins. Even when he wins, he doesn't feel like he wins. And here's a friend of his apologizing and saying you won. I love this because it's such an interesting character study of like what happens with Hangman now. He's won.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun for Daniel to come at it in a different, you know, psychological way of a lot of the stuff had been people demanding things from Hangman, people wanting Hangman to apologize, people wanting Hangman to be, you know, to be different. And Daniel was taking accountability, saying that it's his fault that they had the match. It's his fault that Hangman had to do this to him. And I thought it was kind of an interesting reverse psychology way of appealing to his emotions. And then you saw him kind of conflicting at the end as he kind of walked off camera and shoved the camera out of his face.
Yeah, it's I forgot. Yeah, he shoved the camera. Like that is a nice study of like, I'm so curious what's going to happen with him. I'll tie back to someone who's had history with Hangman, and that was Shane Swerve Strickland versus AR Fox, who they had a story going on until AR forgot to point out to people that he didn't have a his visa lined up or his passport or whatever. This was more back and forth than I expected, but it still was fairly heavy. Like, just because it was more back and forth than I expected doesn't mean it was a back and forth match. It was still pretty heavily Strickland. He ended with his stomp at the end, and AR Fox was like halfway across the, like at least mid ring, so that was pretty impressive. And then AR Fox, I guess knowing Swerve so well, folded, and I thought it was a cool way to respond to it. The important thing here, though, is after the match, Ricochet gets on the screen and basically, you guys wouldn't let me speak this week. Well, you're going to let me speak now, and I got something to say. And then he's got Prince Nana held at scissor point. But listen, holding scissors to someone's throat is actually not a good thing. Like, that is an intimidating thing. That is a scary thing. Scissors can do a lot of damage. He held it so high up that you only saw the tip of the scissor. So it kind of looked like he was just holding a little thing. And you're like, what are we threatening here? And then you see the rest. But I just, to me, it looked really funny to be like, I'm going to, like, he should have been holding it almost by like the handle. So it looked like a hole. Like, but that was just my little opinion. Joe, no one's going to boo you, so we can't hear you. So please give your piece.
I like the Swerve and AR Fox match, mainly because I thought it was a nice way to close that loop between the two of them. So we saw a nice little, handshake, kind of, making amends from all the things, all the beef they had. So I liked that little moment they had. Ricochet being unhinged still is kind of fun to watch. I'm just waiting for someone to have a pair of bigger scissors than him. I want, like, the Simpsons, the alien from the Simpsons with, like, the humans will have a board with a nail in it, and then we'll have a bigger board with a nail in it.
And then they'll have a board too big. Then they'll make a board with a nail too big, and that'll be their undoing. Oh, I love that episode. The monkey's paw. I will say this Ricochet character is really hitting it for me. Like,
I like just I like this American Psycho Ricochet.
But he's still such a nerd.
Yeah.
Like, for a guy who's so cool, he's such a nerd.
Yeah, he's still coming across like he's trying to play tough.
Yeah. But he's a nerd. We have backstage, we have Renee Paquette interviewing Mercedes Moné. Mercedes just decked out in titles and it looks awesome. And Mercedes is like, I've wrestled around the world. I wrestled in Japan. I've wrestled in the UK. And then there is no silence because the only two places she and she's like, then I'm gonna wrestle in Australia. And listen, for wrestling, that is wrestling around all around the world. Like, and she's wrestled more than that because I think she did a Saudi show, but still, like, it's just funny. We're like, I wrestled all around the world and I'm naming two places. But the highlight of this was Harley Cameron early. Let me refer, earlier in the night. Was it earlier in the night? Yeah, earlier in the night, right? Harley and Tony Storm had their Aussie off.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was that night or if it was from like a previous whatever, but yeah, they showed it earlier.
No, it was this. So earlier in the night, Tony Storm was being interviewed after Mariah May typical vignette. And then Harley Cameron walks up and they just start having this super Aussie conversation. And Tony Storm basically convinces Harley Cameron that she should have a match in Australia. So Harley Cameron comes up to Mercedes Moné and has a guitar and sings this song about why she should be the one that Mercedes wrestles in Australia. And it is hilarious. It's a great song. The scene is like cringy, but funny. It's so good. And Mercedes handled it great. She starts dancing at a point. And then Mercedes goes, and I actually like the response. Mercedes goes, you haven't won a match. You haven't won a match in 20. You didn't win a match in 2024. You didn't win a match in 2023. So gnar. And she says gnar, which popped me because it's, the Australian thing. Harley looks disappointed. Clearly, I still think they're setting up Harley versus Moné. I'm loving it because Harley should get a match in Australia. Harley is maybe one of the most over wrestlers they have in general. Strike while the iron's hot. Have her go out and beat a couple people, get a couple wins, annoy Mercedes enough that she gets the victory, that she gets the match. I love this. Do you have any additional thoughts?
No, Harley is a national treasure, whether it's Australia, the US, any country. Like, she needs to be protected at all times and used as much as possible because she is pure entertainment. I look forward to how they kind of build this out leading up to that show. Because she's going to have to get a win. If I'm Mercedes, though, like, wouldn't you want to take a challenge from someone who hasn't won a match? That seems like it would be an easy W.
Say that again?
If I'm Mercedes, wouldn't you want to take a challenge from someone who hasn't won?
That's what I thought you said. I thought you said for a second that Harley would have an easy W. I'm like, wait, what? You're right, but Mercedes, she's all about the show, though. She, like, Mercedes is weird because she's got that heel that she's very typical heel in a lot of ways, but she does like her big victories.
Also, I'm going to say, do you think Mercedes will do the belt collector storyline better than what they did with Kenny?
I think they already are.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking too. I just wasn't sure.
You know, she's walking around with all those belts. I think she looked really good with them. So I'm very excited for that. So then we go into, I will say, let me rephrase it. I think they already are, but they need to keep pointing it out. Like, she needs to constantly have those belts around, and it needs to always, she needs to always be draped in them, because realistically with a belt collector, like, there's not a lot of story there, except you just keep going and winning. The story is just, you always look cool with all those belts.
Yeah.
So then we go to a women's match. It was Jamie Hayter versus Julia Hart. This was a back and forth match. This was, I mean, clear, and as it should be, the two of them have already wrestled, and they're both at equal footing. Jamie Hayter did end up winning with the Haterade. After the match, Jamie Hayter gets on the mic and is very British. I think she said buttered your roll or buttered or something like that. It was very funny to me. But she kind of did what Ospreay did to Buddy, where she's like, you don't need what you've been doing. Like, you're awesome on your own. And if you want round three, we'll go at it. The interesting thing here is, though, because there's a, not long after, there's a like vignette of the three remaining members of the House of Black clearly changing. They're no longer, I don't think they're gonna be the House of Black anymore, but like acknowledging they're on their own now, like saying, well, the voice that's been here is gone, we're on our own. Feels a little weird based on what Hayter said, because Hayter was almost sounding like she should go on her own, but clearly she's gonna stay part of this. What did you think of the match, and what did you think of all that stuff after?
Match made sense for being 50-50 for the most part. I was surprised that Jamie won, but with what they were trying to tell at the end, with her talking to Julia and telling her, you know, giving her her props and talking about how she can go on and be great by herself without having the House in Black, I think that made more sense with Jamie winning then. I'm interested to see how this all plays out. Like you said, Will told that to Buddy, and I think, was it Copeland who said it to Brody? Or I can't remember who gave Brody the pep talk.
Might have been Copeland. I can't remember who said it to, to Brody.
Received the whole, no, you don't need to be following anyone. You're great on your own type of thing. So I'm interested to see where this all goes for those three. Either way, Jamie and Julia, I feel like both of them could like use some heating up again. I just felt like I don't want them to get lost in the shuffle. And they are both really solid. I feel like Jamie is still hasn't gotten close to where she was before she got injured. So I'd like to see her keep getting built back up into being kind of that powerhouse that she was.
Ophelia is telling us that Hellhounds and Hounds of Hell are both trademarked for Buddy and Brody, which are awesome names. I wonder how they throw that in with Julia. I will say, at the end of the new group's vignette, well, same group, but at the end of their vignette, Brody's like, when we bark together. And if you look, go back and watch it. If you look at Julia, she's trying not to laugh. She has a smile on her face, and I guarantee it is a smile of someone holding back laughter. Just because it's just I guarantee, like, he's in a mask. The whole thing just looks ridiculous, and in a good way. I really enjoyed it, but like, I get how filming that must have felt, you know, weird. See, Jesse St. Julia needs an outfit adjustment to match. I disagree. I love her outfit.
Yeah.
She can still be spooky. Like, it's okay. And Ophelia pointing out the part, he's the only one who barked. They didn't bark together.
It's a very cheesy line. If someone said that to you in a fight, I don't know how you would keep a straight face.
Yeah, I don't either.
It reminds me of going back to the Simpsons reference where they all have their bow tries, and then like Ralph comes out and like painted as a chat or whatever, and like, yeah, I think he meows.
God. That's great.
It might have been, was it like the Lord of the Flies like
episode? It was amazing. And yes, These taste like burning. Brody was walking a dog. I don't think House of Julia is a better name. House of Heart. Because, you know, I'm not trying to pronounce what this. If Joe, if you want to give it a shot, you're more than welcome to. Hold on.
I mean, I initially thought it was baklava, but it's
Well, he's making fun of the masks, but the mask, but he's putting a pun to it, and I appreciate the pun. I just don't know how to say it. I butchered the word anyway.
I don't know. Just too smart for me.
Yeah, I mean, I just, it's a pun I can't, he's trying to, like, the joke is balaclava or whatever, where it says the full mask, but it's barca calava. I just can't say it. I know what you're trying to say, Jesse. I can't pronounce it with the bark. It's my problem. I like the pun.
Barca clava? Barca clava? I don't know.
Barca clava.
Barca lounge?
Balaclava. To me, it's a mask. It's a bark mask.
All I know is, Ryan, when we bark together.
And then only one person barks. The dog didn't even bark. I love a dog. So that, I think, am I missing anything? Was that our dynamite?
No, so we covered the main event with Copeland. Yeah. So I think that was it.
Any final thoughts on our dynamite?
What's your fun rating?
Let me go. It's a 3 out of 4 fun. Let me go. I didn't like the GIF, Jared, and the vinyl thing.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. Opening was awesome. Matches themselves were really good. I just didn't like, I think the Jarrett and MJF segment could have been condensed again. And I don't like the final beatdown.
Yeah. I think the Jarrett and MJF parts were stretched due to limited roster. So I'm guessing that's why. But
yeah.
The Death Riders, yeah, we need to, I feel like we're stalling. I don't know what we're waiting for. It's something
with the, with the Death Rider story,
yeah. Like, I don't know what we're like slowly going along this path of the storyline where it's like it's not Kenny right now because he's busy. It wasn't Darby because now he's climbing a mountain, he's working on climbing Mount Everest. So I'm like, what's going on? What's our direction? Who's going to be? It's not going to be Copeland. So I just don't know what we're doing. Unless it is going to be Copeland for some strange reason and Christian tried to cash in his contract.
Yeah. We said this when they started the Death Rider story. You cannot have this we're changing things story and let it meander because it's going to lose steam quick. Like, you have to deliver.
Yeah.
And they never delivered.
It's just in its own little, like, universe by itself.
Yeah, it really is.
I wish you would just, like, you know, wreak havoc throughout and just, like, mess with both shows, mess with all sorts of different people. And you could have a couple of people stand up to them, sure. But, like, I want it to be outside this little vortex of it only involves 4 people or 5 people or however many.
Yeah, that's my annoying thing. Like, it had the promise of everyone it wouldn't touch everything, and that died quickly. And Scott, I don't know the answer if OC is in. If Scott George asked if OC is injured, I don't know that answer. I don't know if he stepped aside because that's part of the story. Again, Danielson, OC, Darby, there is like a fun thing there, but they're not leaning into it where it's like, I keep taking out your heroes. Like, that should be the story. I keep killing your heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't lean into it.
But we'll keep watching until they do, until something changes.
Hopefully. And with that, we're going to wrap up tonight's show, the show that Kate ditched us. I mean, almost an hour and a half, so not that quick. Before we do our own plugs, I'm going to plug something on the show. I demand.
Can you do that on our podcast? Can you plug things?
Yes.
It feels like that's dirty.
We're a dirty podcast. I demand that you go to our pro wrestling tee stores, prowrestlingtees.com/markorderpod, buy one of, if not all four of our t-shirts. Logo on front, word on front, word on front, logo on back, logo, word on pocket, something on back. That's how I describe them. Go buy one of, if not all four, buy in multiple sizes. You don't know what the, you know, maybe you're bulked up for winter just to stay warm and you're going to slim down for summer. You never know. So go buy multiple sizes. It works out for everyone. That is what I'm demanding of you people. Go and do it. But Joe, when we're not here, where can you be found?
Well, most social media at _AsianJoe. I will plug my Blue Sky, which is just at Asian Joe, all one word. So yeah, that's basically where I'm at.
All right. You can find me personally at my history blog, hereforhistory.com, at hereforhistory on Blue Sky, at _hereforhistory on Twitter. But you can find us on all socials at MarkOrderPod. We're just hanging out all days and having good fun. So as soon as I get this media up, we'll be ending. So first up with the outro. Wait. I want to thank the chat for hanging out. Jesse, who's making a joke about us just sitting in the dark. Scott, Ophelia, Big G, Fernando, Taylor Cannon was here earlier. So thanks, guys, for hanging out. It's always a lot more fun when there's people chatting. And now with that, I put out the outro overlay. And I hit...
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled